This weekend, our church was able to host a marriage retreat where we had couples from all across Wisconsin join us. Our speaker at that retreat is also our speaker this morning. Ted Lowe is the director of Married People. It's an organization with a mission to make marriage real, simple, and fun. And it is also Ted's very first time in Wisconsin. So would you please give a warm Oak Creek welcome to Ted Lowe.
Well, it is certainly great to be with you guys. Had such a great time this weekend at the marriage retreat. This is my first time in Wisconsin, and churches are a little bit different here. You guys have coat racks. Yeah, and and food courts. That's amazing. Does every church have a food court? No? Okay. Well, that's okay. They can just come here. Right? Well, it is, again, it's so good to be with you guys. I have been married for 23 years to a woman who's way out of my league. And we have three biological children, and we're in the process of adopting two more. So that's, do the math, five kids at my house. Don't clap. The way we do it is not clap-worthy. Yeah, it's funny. It's a little bit crazy. I prayed a prayer. I said, God, you have highly overestimated my abilities as a human. It hit me at Christmas that there were 10 things that were breathing in my house. And I went, I can't be responsible for that. So that's why I have to always hand it back to him. And I've been working with married couples since 2001. And I get really excited. I feel like we've got this new opportunity to really reach this next generation of couples who want their marriages to work, and all generations that want their marriage to work. And we've been excited about that. But today I want to talk about something that's important to all of our relationships. And I'll just dive in. In the 1960s, the people in the technology industry, they came to the U.S. government and they said, you should know something. You should know that technology is happened so rapidly, and it's going to change people's life like you would not believe. It's going to give them back so much time at home. It's going to give them back so much time at work. You should know that eventually the biggest issue of our day and age is going to be, what do we do with all this excess time? They said the 1980s, by the mid-1980s, that it was going to be known as the leisure period. Well, that didn't happen, did it? Part of it happened, part of it happened. But they thought we were going to have all this time back, to watch Miami Vice. I love it that these two were protecting, Miami from Colombian drug lords. I'm sorry, pink tank top just doesn't make me shudder in my boots a little bit. We're going to have all the time in the world to grow out our mullets. Where's our 80s ladies? Yeah, any of you ladies in here used to spend 4 hours a day building whatever that is? Yeah, they thought we were going to have all the time in the world to do that. They thought we'd have all the time in the world. But here's what's happened. In the U.S., we're working an average of 6 more hours a week than we did in 1965. 6 more hours a week. Sociologists say that we are working more, 4 more hours a week doing hidden work. So we're doing all this extra work. And there's this hidden work where we've got our laptops, on our laps, and we are knocking out a few things. Are we making phone calls? We've got all this technology. Or we're just working a little bit, because there seems to be something in most of us that when there's a space of time, we tend to fill it up. So if technology gave us time at work, not only did we fill it up, we filled it up some more. There's something in us, especially, I feel like in the United States especially, that there's something in us that space, we're not sure what to do with that. And then we're working more than ever at home. They call it hidden work. I think that's a terrible phrase for that, because I don't think it's hidden at all for those that we love. My daughter... I have two sons, and then my youngest biological daughter, she says to me when she's 2 years old, she grabs me by my face and she goes, look at me when you talk to me. I'm not sure my boys could pick me out in a lineup. But my daughter says, look at me. And she says to me the other day, I came in, she's telling me a story. And I'm, you know, And she goes, Dad. And I said, what? She goes, stop. In other words, be present. This lady told me after last service, she goes, it's the difference between showing up and being present. Two different things. We can show up, doesn't mean that we're present. But it seems when there's a space on our calendar, we fill it up. And we need some time to just be. Because it's during the times when we can just be that when we can connect with those we love the most, whether it's friends, whether it's family. This is times to be where we get have more space to give each other grace. I mean, think when we're always hurrying and running and hurry up, kids, we got to get in the car, go. It's in those times that the grace goes away. It's in those times where the frustrations rise, and every healthy relationship has some space. But we live in a world that doesn't encourage that. So why don't we have time to just be? If it's what we want, I mean, isn't that what we say we want on like Saturdays? We're like, I wish we didn't have to go anywhere, right? Or we could just hang out here in our pajamas. Wouldn't that be great? Then if we're the boss of us and we're making those choices, why don't we? Because a lot of us have these people. How many parents do we have in here? Yeah, children are high maintenance, aren't they? My brother is a stockbroker, and he says that he tells people there's a guaranteed way to make a lot of money in investments. He tells them, he goes, but you're not going to like the answer. The answer is don't have children. We know we don't want that, but we do know with kids it's busy, and we live at a pace that's crazy, and kids are in activities like never before. I had a clarifying moment one morning sitting in a cold church gym, where we had signed up our four-year-old son to play basketball in a basketball league. And here's the thing. I don't think four-year-old basketball is really even a thing. I don't know what they were doing, but it wasn't basketball. And I thought, what are we doing? And then I thought, well, you know, I was in a basketball league when I was four. It was called My Brother. But we feel this pressure, don't we, parents, to sign them up? We want to sign them up, and there's all these different activities. We want, you know, people where we live, I don't know what it feels like here. It feels like they are, you know, getting kids ready, you know, getting kids ready for ACT, SEC scores when they're like two, because we don't want them to get behind. And we feel all this, and we want them to do all this. Why do we do that? So busy. And then there's this thing. Ooh, you know what? I'm kind of glad that's the response, because a lot of people, we don't think about the ooh part of this. We think about the cool part of this. And let's be honest, this thing is cool, right? It does a lot of things. It's an amazing thing. How many of you grew up with a phone that was attached to the wall? And that phone would ring, and everybody go, get the phone! You heard outside, I think that was the phone! Right? And you'd run and get it. My mom, actually, maybe you read about this, had the world's first mobile phone. My dad got her the world's longest cord. And she was so excited. She's like walking around the kitchen. Look at this, I'm so mobile. She's choking the dog, but she's pretty excited about it. Yeah? And then we have this. And I think about when you go on missions trips, and I know this church is very passionate about reaching the world. And you go to these countries where they don't have this thing. And they're present, aren't they? Kids are playing instead of frozen. I mean, the fact that we have to beg our kids to, hey, have 90 minutes a day activity. How many of you grew up when, you know, you'd get home and you'd leave, your mom says, don't come back in until the street light comes on. Yeah, I grew up in a little town in Alabama. My dad's a fifth-generation cotton farmer. Had 1,500 acres, and we were, you know, just playing. He bought us three-wheelers because he thought motorcycles were too dangerous. We have not let him live that down again. Dad, what you bought us was banned by the government. But that's what we did. We went on adventures, and now I'm having to go outside. I remember taking my sons canoeing when they were like six and four. And my youngest goes, is this all we're doing? We're just paddling down the river? Well, he's been in these magical virtual worlds. Why in the world do he want to go canoeing when he could disappear and fly, and all these different things? But it's a different thing, and we're stuck to it. And you watch people, you think about these people that don't know what the context of this. They come to the United States and they go back and report and they say, it's amazing. People, I don't know what they're doing, but they're all walking around on these little boxes. Yeah. And they have to put the, don't cross the streets. Have you seen this? They're now having to put like stop on crosswalks right here with lights because people are getting ran over. This is the true thing. And everybody's, can you imagine? Everybody's on these little boxes. Even when they're with each other, they're on little boxes, right? When they sit at restaurants, they're on little boxes. And not only that, a lot of restaurants have bigger boxes on the wall. So if you've noticed restaurants now, it's really hard to find a restaurant that doesn't have TV. In fact, I had to swap sides with my son these last couple of days, so we wouldn't watch basketball, right? I guess, you know, he's got competition between his bald dad and basketball. I'm going to lose that every time, right? But there, it's all around. And you think about, you know, in the Bible, you think about Paul, who wrote most of the New Testament. He was constantly writing about, here's how the culture that you're living is. It is impacting your relationship with each other and with me. And I've wondered, what in the world would Paul say to us about technology? Now listen, I love technology. In fact, I can't even preach without a TV. But we've got to start asking questions about it. Where is it good? Where is it not? So why don't we say yes? We say yes for the kids. We say yes because of technology. Why do we say yes? Let's go to the motives of this a little bit. We say yes, or we sign up, or we do all these things, and we take extra projects at work, and we're trying to excel in our careers, and we're trying to excel as parents, and we're trying to excel as people that volunteer at church, and we're, better not bring up that one, and we try to excel in these different, why are we saying yes? What's the motive? I think this is a huge one. Significance. When we do things versus just being, there is a sign that we've got something accomplished. My wife would tell you if she was here, she would admit she is the chore master. She is always doing chores. And I tell you, my mom passed away when I was when I was 10. I grew up with my dad, my brother, and I. And we were so messy. We were like bears with furniture. My wife grew up in a very tidy home. Her mom was always on her about her room. And I said, I don't even think my dad knew where my room was. And these two people got married. Yeah, right. She, you know, I told her, I said, honey, I get it. I understand. A lot of times people that are very, very neat and very, very tidy and see everything, you know, is out of place, you know, can see everything that's wrong and everything's not clean. A lot of times those people marry normal people. So I get it. I get the struggle. Struggle's real. I get it. But it's this busy, and you go, hey, this was messy, now it's not. There's some significance in that. At work, you know, there's significance. Man, I worked extra hard on this project, and I stayed up two or three nights in a row, and wow, my boss was like, this is amazing, and my team was like, this is amazing. Or maybe you build something, you're like, you know what we're going to do? We're going to go build this thing, and we're going to work extra hard because we're going to be a week ahead of the game, and we build this thing. Oh man, when people see this thing, they're gonna wanna buy this thing. This thing is so big. This thing gives us significance. And we're trained at very early ages for significant, that we get a sticker. We potty train our children with little stickers, right? We start saying, doing is so rewarded through significance. Here's another reason. We're not encouraging this dude at all. Nobody's riding with that guy and go, hey, you go, you hammock. This guy doesn't get rewarded, does he? Here's another reason. Why don't we say yes? This is huge. Because everybody else is doing it. What do we tell our kids? If your friend told you to jump off a bridge, would you do it? I mean, we say that to them, yet we all kind of are following. Not all of us, but boy, it's so difficult not to do what people around us are doing. We didn't let our kids get phones until seventh grade. And you would have thought we were Amish. Our kids were like, you have got to be kidding me. What? Because why? Because the world is doing that. I mean, I grew up again with a phone on the wall. And I got fourth and fifth graders going, hey, how come I don't have a computer in my pocket? Right? It's just a different thing. It's nobody's fault. It's just what we see. And we tend to do what we see. This is from Steve Jobs, who lived in a world of work and getting ahead of the game. He says this, he says, as he's dying, he says, I reached the pinnacle of success in the business world. In others' eyes, my life is an epitome of success. However, watch this, aside from work, I have little joy. In the end, wealth is only a fact of life that I am accustomed to. He says, at this moment, lying on the sick bed and recalling my whole life, I realize that all the recognition and wealth that I took so much pride in have paled and become meaningless in the face of impending death. You guys go, did you Google the world's most depressing statement? At the end of the day, we've got somebody who was arguably one of the most influential people of our time, for sure in the idea of technology. Here sits Steve Jobs' computer, here hits Steve Jobs' phone, because he poured it into it, man. And you learn his story, and it's a mess. His relationships were a mess, but the whole world is going, well done. Well done. You're amazing. I mean, what other products in the world do you hear a launch of that product and everybody stops, right? The new iPhone's coming out, and he poured everything to that. And what we do, we get the benefit of going, this is where that leads. But there's a different creator of something, and it's Jesus. And he speaks right into this whole thing with technology and this whole idea of we just feel busy. He speaks right into this, which is so amazing when you think about the difference in time, the difference in technology, the way things were. When I landed on this passage, I thought, that's it. It really, really speaks to this. Now, if some of you, if you've been around church for a while, you've heard this about Mary and Martha, and you go, oh, yeah, I get it, the business versus not business. But there are a couple of nuances in there. There's a couple of things I just asked you just for the next few minutes just to go, okay, I'm going to try to see this passage in a different way if you have heard it before, because it speaks to the now in a very, very powerful way. It says, as Jesus and his disciples were on their way, he came to a village where a woman named Martha opened her home to them. Okay, how many of you in this room, if visitors show up unannounced at your house, that kind of becomes your responsibility? Right? This would be your responsibility. You'd feel this. You'd feel this coming on. This is kind of a passage, you know, you guys are like, yeah, men can do this, but women not so much. But women, it says, he came to a village where a woman named Martha opened her home to him. Now, here's the thing that Martha didn't get that we'll probably get. She didn't get a text. Hey, we're almost there. Right? Oh, Jesus, hi. Oh, you've brought a lot of people with you. Nice. Come on in. And she started instantly feeling this. But here's the good news for her. She had a sister called Mary. Awesome. Awesome, I've got my sister Mary. She's gonna have to help because she's living here rent-free. I mean, it is, you know, and culturally, Mary feels what I do, that when people come over, culturally, it's our responsibility to love on them, to prepare, you know, meals for them, to prepare a place for them to rest and to be, and Mary's gonna feel that too, right? If you've heard the story, she doesn't. She says, who sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said. Now you think about this in a minute. Martha's like, whoa, hey, all right, okay, we're good. We can pull this off, all right? We together, you know, teamwork makes the dream work with my sister, right? And she looks, and she's trying to wrap her brain around all that's about to have to happen, and she looks out the corner of her eye, and her right-hand man, her right-hand lady is sitting there. Jesus, and you think about that, you go, Mary, well done. How many people got to be in a home? How many people just got to sit at the feet of Jesus? I know the number has to be relatively small, and the thing I love about this whole passage is it's one of the rare glimpses that we get of Jesus in a home. Because Jesus, the masses would follow him. He was loved by many, but he was despised by many. He had turned the religious world upside down. And so they're constantly, religious leaders were constantly trying to ask him questions to discredit him, constantly just needing him to go away. But we get this place where he's sitting at home with people he loves, but this is most important, and people who love him back. So what does Jesus look like during the time where we're just together? During the time where we're just doing life? What does he do? And what Mary did is she thought, I'm just going to be with Jesus. She didn't ask Martha any questions, not any I know of. She just does this. But her sister, Martha, did this. But Martha was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. Distracted, that word is translated as to encumbered. That she was just, she felt this, she was frustrated by this, it was all she could see, it was tunnel vision of all the things that she has to do. You know, never mind that the creator of the universe is in the other room, I've got to do all this stuff. And we have friends in our small group, one of the ladies said to us, she goes, can I be honest, like, I don't really love this passage because somebody's got to cook. She said, when I hear this taught, I'm just like, I just have to focus on something else because this isn't reality. Somebody's got to take care of things. Someone's got to cook because preparations had to be made. Do they have to eat? Did they show up because they were hungry? Probably. Did they need a place to sleep? Yes. Does a magic genie come in and make all that happen? No. So somebody did. The question is, can you do those things in a way where you can also be? Can you do things in a way where you can also be? So what's her decisions here have to be if that's the case? Maybe she goes and sits down with Jesus and lets people get hungry enough that they start helping her cook. I don't know. What decision did she have to make? Maybe go, I was going to make 10 things, but I'm going to make 2. You know, I'm going to call Grubhub and I'm just going to let them bring it over. What decisions did she have to make? And can she do both? That's the question. It says this. I love this. Martha came to him, meaning Jesus, and asked, Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do the work by myself? You got to realize how culturally bold this was. Women were not allowed to speak to men in public. And Martha walks into the man and says, Are you kidding me? Don't you care? I mean, she just completely bypasses Mary. Oh, I'll get to you later, sister. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Don't you care? And sometimes I think we create these lives that are so busy, that are so overwhelming. We schedule our kids. We schedule ourselves. We keep saying yes, 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 because it's good. Yes, all these things are good. They're not evil in and of themselves. And then we're just like, God, where are you? Won't you just help me? You know, and our answer to all the crazy is never to stop doing something. It's to get more help. We want more help from the people that live with us. We want more help from people at work. We need more help and get more organized. If I just get more organized, then it would all work out. And we feel all this, but there's never a pause to go, wait a minute. Maybe it's just too much. Maybe it's just too much. Maybe I need to say no. Maybe I need to say, hey, thanks for that invitation, but I need to say no. I need to say no. It's always help me. Tell her to help me. That's the answer for her. I got all this, and this has to be done, and I need help. Jesus says this, and I love his response. Martha, Martha, silly old bear. You know, because here's the thing. This is what I love about Jesus. Like, he could have really ramped up and powered up and go, are you kidding me? I am God in human form in your home. You dare come to me and tell me what I need to do? And he goes, the bipolar opposite of that. What does he say? Martha, Martha. I love it. Ted, Ted, fill in your name. Joe, Joe, Starbucks, Joe, Joe. Sandy, Sandy, Susan, Susan, whatever. Put your name in there. Looks at us and says, the Lord answers. He says, you are worried and upset about many things. Here's what's great. Martha didn't even have to tell him that. He could tell. I don't know what Martha had going on, like what kind of noises she was making in the kitchen. I don't know what she was slamming down a little bit louder than was necessary. But Jesus knew. He knew. He said, I get it. And I love the way he acknowledges it. He acknowledged her. Martha, you're worried and upset about many things. I see that. I see that. And he says, but few things are needed. Or indeed, only one. He said, you're all just so consumed by all these things. You're just so, you're so flooded and just, I don't know if he had to, you know, ease her into it. Few things are needed. Okay, really one. Only one thing is needed. This word translates into appetite. There's only one thing to be hungry for in this situation. Only one. You're doing all the cooking. It's great. You're doing all this. It's great. But truly, at the end of the day, Martha, take a breath. Take a breath. I mean, those of us who are getting a little bit older, we know that life is a blink. And we're missing it. And we're missing him. And we're missing each other. And he says, only one thing is needed. So what is that one thing? Mary's chosen one is better. That one thing was Jesus. That one thing was Jesus. And when it's Jesus plus all these things, when Jesus just becomes this one of these things I do on Sunday, one of these things when I pray, one of these ways I start my day, Jesus bless all that I have to do. He says, at the end of the day, it's really about me. As we have brought two new children into our home, 11 and 9 years old, who have just been through so much trauma, it's been so difficult. But everybody we know that's spoken into us has said this. They go, you just got to take it one day at a time. You can do anything for a day. And I started to realize how little that I lived with that in my head. And I think that's wisdom for all of us, isn't it? I think this is what I was supposed to be doing the whole time. And this difficulty, these relationships have made me go, all right, Jesus, you got to be the one thing if I'm going to love all these people in my house. I got to start with you if I'm going to be able to do this. And I started to realize, my wife and I talked about how Jesus was in our lives and we did quiet times and we love him and we do ministry and we served him. But our need of him has been elevated dramatically. And I love it. My days, my wife's days are so much more difficult. But what it's doing to us and what it is doing for our kids when we say, Jesus, I need you. I know all these other things are not going to happen, and they're not going to happen in the way you want them to if I don't need you first. It says, Mary has chosen what is better. I like that clap. That's okay. Yeah. Hey, I live in the South. They're the frozen chosen, man. I'm not used to in the South. People don't respond at all. So I like this. You guys just go ahead and respond it up. Yeah. I love it. I love it. Mary has chosen what is better. She picked the right thing. And that's got to be frustrating to Martha. Mary picked the right thing? You got to be kidding me. Mary's not doing anything. She's being. He says this. Watch this. This is the part that just floored me. I went, only Jesus, only the Bible could be this relevant. It says, and it will not be taken from her. I know, Martha, I know you want me to say, okay, chop, chop, Mary, go help your sister. How dare you not help your sister? He said, nope, she's chosen what's better and I'm not taking it from her. And here's the thing for all of us. When choosing between being and doing, you get everything that comes with that decision. When we choose being over doing, you get everything that comes with that decision. If you decide, hey, when I get home from work, I'm going to turn my phone off, or I'm not going to do emails. I'm going to sit at dinner. No one's going to have it. When you make that choice, you get everything that comes with that decision. You may have a boss that says, you know what? I'm not giving the promotion to her or to him because I know I can get the other guy on the phone 24 hours a day. You may miss a promotion. You may have trouble keeping that job because I need you to be more accessible. But how many of us have left a job that we poured so much into, and the second we left, we never heard from those people again? Right? I mean, and I've worked at churches, people. I've worked at churches, and I love those people, and I don't judge them in any way, but I worked at church for 9 years, and the phone went silent in that direction. And that's not a slam on them. I haven't been calling in the other direction a lot either. But it just says to this, it's our jobs we are getting paid primarily to do, even in ministry. And long after we're irrelevant at work, and we will all be irrelevant at work, we're going to be relevant at home. It's our legacy. It's what we want our kids to say to us. It's what we want. It's what they need. It's for him to come first. We get everything that comes with that decision. You decide to turn off your phone at night. You say dinner time is sacred time, and we're just going to be together as a family. You're going to get everything that comes with that decision. You're going to get the good stuff, too. This is one of those decisions that, you know, we made years ago. At nighttime, at dinner, no phones, no anything, and we're going to do a little game we call high-low. Give me your high, give me your low. And even on days when our kids have been driving us crazy, we sit around that table, what was your high, what was your low? But you watch it soften as they start answering. Because all of a sudden you've carved out time to be. And you're sitting there. And it's so funny. We'll forget sometime to do it. And one of the kids go, hey, what about high, low? Why? Because that's our being time. The stats on what? The correlation between families that do mealtime together and drug addiction are staggering. What that does to set kids up. You know what's going on in their world. You start to know what's going on in their world. You know what's hurting them, what's not, and all of a sudden they feel connected and supported, and it just changes things. Every time? No. But the stats are with us that being together, it's huge. What are those decisions that you can make? One of the things my mentor told me early on, he goes, do not be on the phone in your car with your kids or your wife, and do not walk in the house on your phone. Did you know, married couples, the number one time you fight is when you reconnect at the end of the day? Why? Because I think a lot of it's got to be, hey, walking in the house like that. Oh, you're still not quite important enough. I got to finish up all this, right? I think instead of the leisure period, we're going to be known as the hold on period. Hold on. Question is, hold on to what? Because in those moments, we're saying, hold on to anybody but me. These little decisions matter. You go, I'm not going to walk in the house on the phone anymore. And I get it, it's tough. A lot of you, because you stay home with kids, you know, they walk in, you got a baby, you go, here. You've been with big people. I mean, I get it. But what if we made that great? What if we made that great? Because it can be. What's that decision for you? When is it that you're just going to be? What is that thing you need to say no to? Maybe somebody's asked you to do something and you're considering it and it's good and you even want to be a good Christian person and do it and you want to be a good witness and do it and you see that and you go, okay, all right. And one more time we say yes to. What is that thing maybe you go, nope. Not this season, I've already got enough yeses. What is that thing in your life you go, you know what? Someone's going to be really disappointed with me, but at the end of the day, my kids need to know, my spouse needs to know that they're more important than that, and I'm going to call and break the news to them once instead of breaking that news every day to my family. What is it? What is it? Some of you are in a job, and it's wiping out your family. And I get it. We've all got to live indoors and eat. You know, homes don't run on love. You're not getting a bill for love every month, right? I get it. Here's a question. What is that spot? Where is that place? Do you need to start looking? Because at the end of the day, it's so important. Steve Jobs says it this way. He said, whichever stage in life we're at right now with time, we will face the day. Steve Jobs. when the curtain comes down, Steve Jobs, who did not do family well, says, treasure love for your family, love for your spouse, love from your friends. Treat yourself well. Steve Jobs, founder of Apple. He gets to the end of his life and he discovers that Jesus is right. Mary has chosen what is better and it will not be taken away from her. Jesus Christ, the creator of the world. We get to do it. Yeah. Here's the great thing. Here's the great thing I want you to hear. Is every day God says that his mercies are new every morning. His mercies are new every morning. None of this message, none of this passage is go home and feel guilty. God bless, see you next year. Right? It's not that. It's to go, wow, I get to wake up tomorrow and do something a little different. I get to make a choice because I'm the boss of me. I can choose things. I'm an adult. I can choose things. And I'm going to choose to do fill in the blank. So don't walk out feeling guilty. Don't walk out and tell your spouse or whoever you're with, I'm glad you heard that. He was talking to you. So was my elbow. Yeah. Right now, I want you to, in your mind, I want you to draw a circle around yourself. You're only responsible for the person inside the circle. Yeah, so what is that? We get to choose. You get to choose. You walk out of here, hopefully feeling lighter and not heavier. I get to make a choice, and you get everything that comes with that decision. So what is it for you? Because the Holy Spirit, he's loud, isn't he? And I hope that you've been here. Oh, I know what that is, Ted. I know what it is. I know what it is. I get it. And it may be difficult, but you get it. And he's for you. Oh, he's so for you. He is for you. He's adopted you. He is for you. I'll close with this. We have some dear friends in our life. They're 10 years older than us. They're down the road with their kids. And they just had a great marriage. We loved how they parented. We love how they did family. And somehow they were always fun and time off to go on vacation. So that interests me. I don't know what you're doing, but I want your life. But we just watched them, and they were so gracious to us, and they were always like a hotline for parenting and a hotline for marriage, and they're just great, great people. And tragically, it was Mark and Jackie. Jackie was killed in a car accident. And I had the privilege and the pain of walking Mark through some of that grief and just being there for him. I didn't have any answers for him. I would be there for him. And one morning, he says to me, we're hanging out at breakfast, and he goes, you know what my biggest regret of my marriage is? And I thought, and I've been doing this a long time, I thought, oh, no, was there some, you know, big secret that he's about to reveal? That, if he does, great, we'll pray it through. But, I'm just honestly disappointed. And he says, every night after, you know, I came home from work after dinner, he goes, Jackie was always trying to create this time for us just to be together. And he goes, you know, sometimes he'd walk around the neighborhood. If it got really fancy, we'd go to Starbucks. He goes, but mostly she wanted me to come out onto the front porch and rock. Now, if you go to Georgia, most people have a front porch with rocking chairs on it. Nobody's rocking. Why? Because everybody's doing. And he said, she would say, hey, come on out. And he goes, more times than I care to admit, I'd go, not tonight. I got to catch up on some things. Or I'll be out there in a minute. And he goes, in a minute would turn into 45 and I go out there and she's gone. He goes, the biggest regret of my marriage is that I just didn't rock. And I told him, I said, every time I get a chance, when I'm talking about this idea of business, I'm going to share that story as a way of honoring Jackie and honoring the pain you've gone through. But most of all, to honor the Lord Jesus Christ, who says very clearly to us in the midst of all our crazy, take a breath and make a choice. And when you do, you get everything that comes with that decision. It's a choice, and you can make it. So here's the question. What is one thing you can do to just be? And again, I hope God's been whispering to you this whole time. What is that thing? Right now, I want to pray for you about that thing. Jesus, I thank you for the leadership of this church. when I've heard the history of this church of faithfulness, of trusting you way before there was a big building, trusting you way before there were all these great amenities, trusting you way before there were all these volunteers, trusting you way before all of this, that listened. I thank you for that. And it has served not only this community and this church, but the world. The fact that this church is, that there is a fallen officer who is, you know, it's just brought so much pain to so many that they look at this church as that's where that we want to go and honor him, but also to get peace, because we've heard about that church and we've heard about these people and we've heard about those leaders. God, I thank you for that. I am humbled by that. God, I pray that that would just be a time of people seeing, you know, that they just fall into your lap and they just sit and they look up at you and go, Jesus, I'm hurting, but I know you love me. I know you're going to do that. And God, I pray very specifically that today for everybody in here who's that relationship that needs a little bit more presence and a little less technology. What is that job that has just been eaten alive at relationships? God, would you help us to let the most important thing be the most important thing? Will you be so loud about that for us? Would you help us to know what that is without a doubt? Just soul talk. That if we were to explain it, nobody else would get it, but we know that we know that we know. God, I pray that everybody in this room would know that they know exactly spot that they need to stop doing something and start doing something, or even to continue to do something. That maybe they thought it wasn't important, but they go, yep, that's a good reminder that it is. Thank you for loving us. Thank you that our faith and our relationship with you is not based on doing, but being with you. Thank you care more about us being with you than us doing for you. Only you, Jesus. Only you. And we're grateful. We're just grateful. Pray it all in the name of Jesus. Amen.